What in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark
Latham. Good afternoon, Mark Latham, leader of One Nation in New South Wales. How are you, mate?
Very well, thanks, Brent. Good to be talking to you on a Friday.
Yeah. Mate, this is out of the box. We were talking about chicken schnitzels earlier this afternoon and how to make a good chicken schnitzel. I know that you're a bit of a dab in the kitchen. You've even put out a cookbook. How do you do your chicken schnitzel?
Well, I haven't done it for a little while, but you've got to bash the chicken breast nice and flat. You cover it in flour, don't you? Then dip it in egg and then whack the breadcrumbs on and maybe some herbs and spices in there as well to give it a bit of extra taste. And don't overcook it. You know, I think that's always the main thing with chicken. Don't overcook it because it can go a bit hard and tasteless. So, that's the basics. Is there any other way of doing it?
We had a caller. It just came out of the sort of from out of nowhere. And he was suggesting that exactly as you point out, if you cook the chicken too much, it can be dry. So he was suggesting that you prepare the chicken the day before, take a breast, cut it in three, if you know what I mean, a long in three. So you turn one into three. And then you brine it in salt and a couple of big glasses of water in the fridge overnight. Take it out, wash the brine off. That tenderizes the meat. And then you go ahead and treat it as you would normally treat it, crumb it, etc., and then cook it in the pan.
Well, there you go. That's more elaborate to do it over 24 hours.
It is,
must be
yeah.
A good taste.
It is.
So we might give that a go. But I think there's an old wives' tale out there, or an urban myth, I suppose, that you can't have chicken slightly pink right in the middle. The chicken, according to the grandmothers and all that over the years, needed to be cooked almost to the point of incineration. So I think you need to guard against that. Okay, I'll give the brine a go over 24 hours. That sounds fantastic. But my main tip is, don't be afraid of having your chicken tender when it comes out of the fry pan or out of the oven.
Okay, let's talk politics. I've got an email here that came through as a result of a discussion we had with a caller earlier this afternoon. Craig said to Glenn the Truckee, who was the guy we were talking about, raised a point about how the media is presenting the sacking of the Victorian politician, saying that she was at a neo-Nazi rally where it was actually a meeting about women's rights. He said, I know that you've got Mark on this afternoon. Can you please ask him his opinion on this subject?
Well, it's quite bizarre that Moira Deeming has now been expelled from the Victorian Liberal Parliamentary Party. That's what happened earlier today after previously she'd been suspended and there'd been a threat of legal action against their leader down there. But I've got to say, I find the whole notion of holding a politician responsible for who turns up to a public meeting to be completely bizarre. I mean, this goes on. I suppose I had a taste of it in the election campaign when we had a meeting in a church hall at Belfield and some violence broke out at the front and I got the blame for it, even though I hadn't invited any of those people, spoken to them. You know, there is a tendency that if you're on the right of centre in politics, you're guilty for everything.
Yes.
And it's absurd to say that Moira Deeming, she was at a rally called Let Women Speak. Now she can't speak at all inside their party room, so that's ironical. Let Women Speak. And some people turned up with Nazi symbols and so forth. She didn't invite them. She didn't know them. She's not responsible for them. If you're at a public meeting, it's politics 101, that unless you've directly invited them, well, anyone can turn up. And they may well have been troublemakers. Some people say they fabricated it to get her into trouble. They weren't really neo-Nazis. Whatever the case, if you're a speaker at an event, you're not responsible for who attends when it's open to everyone in the public. People from the far left of politics right through to the far right may well turn up. And for her to then be picked on by her parliamentary leader down there and kicked out of the party, I just find bizarre. But it's not the first time it's happened. Her predecessor in the Victorian Liberal Party in the upper house, a bloke called Bernie Finn, was kicked out for his views on abortion, which is a conscience vote. He was anti-abortion, but it's a conscience vote. So they basically said, Bernie, you've got the wrong conscience and you're out. So I don't know how you can run a political party on that basis, that, you know, a conscience vote can get you kicked out when that's a free vote for everyone, no matter what they believe in, and that you're responsible now, apparently, for every single person who turns up to a public meeting. Well, if you want to cause trouble for someone, get some galah to dress up with some Nazi symbols and go to the meeting, and the politician speaking is in deep trouble. Well, that's just obviously absurd.
I see the story continues today and that Climate 200 have got involved. There's a story going around today that the Climate 200, the campaign group behind the rise of the Teal Independence, they're going to raise funds to help cover the costs with Greenwich's legal action against you. He's given you an ultimatum, Mark, until May 17. What's today? You've got 5 days to apologise or it's on.
Well, Brent, it's a funny thing. Climate 200 is supposed to save the planet from climate change. I don't know how trying to bankrupt me through lawfare, running me through the courts, has got anything to do with saving the planet. So they're just revealing themselves to be more and more a quasi-political party that is not so much interested in climate change. They want to rub out One Nation because we support coal jobs. We think the transition to the so-called clean energy economy is much too fast. It'll lead to blackouts, unnecessary job losses, and it's not the right pathway. So we're being attacked for that reason. But let's also go to some breaking news that Greenwich's lawyers have issued letters and demands regarding the interview you and I had last Thursday. I'm sure they're not doing it to 2HD, but they're doing it to my Facebook page and New South Wales One Nation, basically because I had the temerity to answer back, to give my version of what actually happened, again, referring to that night at Belfield,
yes,
where Alex Greenwich, without any evidence, without any fact-checking with me, said that I was responsible for violence, I was a disgusting human being, and a very dangerous and hateful individual. So, you know, I was defamed at that point and responded ultimately. But, you know, this tactic of lawfare, I've got to say, I've been in politics a fair while, and I've always thought, if you've got the privilege of being able to speak in Parliament, use that as your forum without going to a different tier of government to run people through the courts and try and break them financially. And that's what this is. Climate 200, as the fundraising entity, is full of millionaires. And we know who they are. They're all listed publicly. And they're donating money to run me through the courts, run up legal bills. It's a lawyer's picnic. Not because Climate 200 thinks it's got anything to do with climate change. They're just trying to bankrupt me and get me out of politics. Well, if people wanted to get me out of politics, they can do that at the ballot box. And I just find this lawfare tactic to be despicable, undemocratic and unnecessary.
You raised the subject yourself just then. I mean, to get you out of politics, what is the situation? Are they seriously thinking that this could lead to you being expelled from the New South Wales Parliament?
Well, that's what they're saying. That's what they're telling the media. The outfit reporting that news today about Climate 200, The Guardian, they never give the other side of the story. The Sydney Morning Herald doesn't. None of them on the left media mention where this started. That night at Belfield, 4 days before the state election, Greenwich the next day tried to fit me up as responsible for the violence when I hadn't spoken to any of the protesters. The two hostile groups had been at each other for 15 years, well before I arrived on the scene. All I did that night was speak to a meeting in a church hall, and after the violence, which occurred before I arrived, plead for people to keep their hands to themselves, and I condemned the violence. So why he came out the next day and said that I was a disgusting human being, which, you know, covers all matters of my existence, why he came out and said I was a very hateful and dangerous individual, when he wasn't there that night, he didn't know what had happened, he didn't talk to me, apparently he had no awareness that these two groups had been at each other and hostile for 15 years, he came out and defamed me. Now, I could have run off and issued writs and so forth, but I've got the parliamentary forum and a few spots in the media to defend myself, and I think that's the appropriate way for an MP to conduct himself rather than running to the courts with a glass jaw. But ultimately, if Greenwich keeps this up, I will counter-sue. I will go to the origins of what happened here, and I believe I had a right to respond and talk about what I thought, in an honest opinion, was disgusting. So if you start something, Alex Greenwich, you might find the other person in the end tries to finish it off. And I don't think starting up legal action, filling the pockets of lawyers in this particular matter is going to be counterproductive. It's going to be productive. It'll be counterproductive in that there'll be counter lawsuits against him for what he said in the first instance, the thing that started the whole dispute.
Is it fair to say, though, that he probably doesn't care about that because he won't be paying the bills out of his back pocket himself, which is different to you?
It looks that way, doesn't it?
Yes.
You know, I wish I had millionaires chipping in funds to defend me in this instance. But does it look, well, if he's got Climate 200, which, you know, you saw the extraordinary amount of money they spent in the federal election campaign, they were spending millions in local seats. They are funded by millionaires. That's all on the public record. So it doesn't look like Alex Greenwich is putting any of his own resources on the line. He's got rich backers, the anti-One Nation, because we stand up for coal jobs and sensible energy policy to try and keep the lights on. All of that's in the public interest, and it's extraordinary that they've now immersed themselves in a vexatious lawfare case against the New South Wales politician. So, you know, Brent, this thing just gets weirder and weirder by the day, I've got to say. And I go back to our interview 8 days ago, which was just me answering your questions and giving an honest account of how I saw things. So I think my main crime is I answer back to these people and I stand up for myself.
You're a man of principle. You stand on your principles. Have you received advice from people that you look up to, as in, I'll use the word mentors, for example, the people that you seek advice from? Have you received advice from those people saying, listen, Mark, just apologise and let it go away?
Well, I've had a lot of support from the public to say, don't allow this lawfare to get you down or break you or get you out of Parliament. Stand up to it.
Right.
People, by and large, see this as a matter of free speech. And if someone, I think anyone in life, wouldn't they, whatever your job is and your vocation in our society, if someone without any evidence, without checking their facts with you, without being there, races out the next day and describes you as a disgusting human being, a very hateful and dangerous individual, well, you'd say something in response, wouldn't you?
Most people would say,
well, look, you know, Mark responded. It mightn't have been the best language to use. He mightn't have phrased it the best way, but he had a right to respond. Alex, you started it. Mark responded. That should be the end of the matter. That's the feedback I'm getting overwhelmingly from people on the street.
Okay, let's talk about the opening of New South Wales Parliament. I was texting with you the other day, and I said, enjoy the refurb. How's the refurb? How's the new chairs?
Well, they feel the same as the old chairs. I mean, you know, I said to the new state treasurer this week, Daniel Mookie, if you're looking for cost savings, just look around you in the New South Wales Parliament, where they're spending millions and millions on things that are completely unnecessary. They went through a process to replace the roof above the 12th floor. And they were doing it in segments, but apparently that made the situation worse, and they wasted about $30 million up there, and now they've got to do it all again.
Oh, what?
And they're scraping off mortar off the front fence that nobody thought was a problem. They've got some ridiculous artificial facade across the front of the building because the sandstone needed restoration. Nobody thought that was the case. The old leather felt and was as comfortable as the new leather. I just see an enormous waste of money, and if the state budget is in heavy deficit and debt, which it is, then the place to start saving some money is the New South Wales Parliament, where they funded up works there that are completely unnecessary and wasting taxpayers' funds. Meanwhile, the government's talking about getting rid of the active kids voucher. So
yes.
There's your priority. If you're out there in Curry or Cessnock or Singleton or Blacktown or Campbelltown and you want to pay your sporting fees for your kids and use your voucher, that looks like it's going. But if you want to waste tens of millions of dollars on the New South Wales Parliament, apparently that's the priority.
Well, if you've got those vouchers, you've only got until, well, unless it changes its mind, you've only got until, the 30th of June this year to use those vouchers.
Well, that's right. But anyone who had a look at the state parliament would see the money that's wasted is incredible. And on top of that, the other extraordinary thing about the opening of parliament was that the governor wasn't present. The Governor, Margaret Beasley, went to the coronation on Saturday, so did Anthony Albanese. Albanese managed to get back for the federal budget in Canberra on Tuesday. Margaret Beasley is in Dubai. Instead of coming back for the opening of the New South Wales Parliament, her big responsibility every 4 years, including making the speech to both houses of Parliament about the government's legislative program, she's gone to Dubai. Hardly a member of the Commonwealth, hardly relevant to the coronation. And, you know, that's another unnecessary expense. And we ended up with her replacement for the opening of Parliament when it's her big responsibility every 4 years. So, Brent, all these things just get stranger and stranger, and you wake up every morning and think, what's going to happen today?
Mark, the federal budget, it was handed down on Tuesday night. Your thoughts?
Well, it's a very unusual budget, I think, in that they had an historic opportunity to move permanently into surplus. That's because of the coal and iron ore revenues, but the surplus will be temporary because they've gone on a spending spree you know, the real test of fiscal policy is what happened before COVID. Everyone expected during the COVID period expenditures would be up at state and federal level, but that's now washing out of the system. And the new spending Jim Chalmers introduced on Tuesday is twice as high as the new spending in the budgets in the 10 years before COVID. So if you go from 2010 to 2020 and then compare it to Tuesday's budget, they're basically on a spending spree, and most of it goes into welfare payments, not productivity and things that grow the economy, but handout money for different groups that I suppose they think, well, they vote Labor, we better give them some more welfare. So I don't think it's a very good budget in that respect. They needed to tighten the belt, they needed to bring spending under control, and they needed to say, well, look, if coal and iron ore revenue is getting the budget into surplus in this financial year, let's have the spending restraint to make sure the surplus is permanent, and after COVID we start paying down the enormous trillion-dollar debt in Canberra. Otherwise the debt is left to our great-grandchildren to pay off, and I think it's a missed opportunity.
Nothing really in the budget for middle-income Australia.
No, and a bizarre promise where Jim Chalmers says the great economic growth opportunity for Australia is renewable energy. Well, the reality is the solar panels and the windmills, by and large, are made in China, so they generate jobs there, not in Australia. The Chinese get the money from freight and the transport of those renewable materials, and when they're assembled in Australia, and if you ever visit them or fly over them, it's a lucky day if you see one worker at a solar farm or at a windmill farm or these floating windmills they talk about off the coast of Newcastle. So they're not big employers, so I think Chalmers is delusional in saying that the government is funding up and supporting what he says is the new growth sector, renewable energy, when the evidence, the economic evidence, shows most of the jobs are created in China and Australia gets the scraps. I suppose, Brent, this is why I'm in trouble with Climate 200, aren't I?
Yeah,
I'm telling the truth about their agenda.
In his budget reply speech overnight, Peter Dutton raised nuclear energy. It looks like that is on the table. I mean, you know, it's been talked about before, but it was interesting that he included it last night as part of his budget reply speech.
Well, the Liberals had, 9 years in government to do something about it. You go back to the Howard government, that commissioned a report about nuclear energy, saying Australia should go down that path in response to climate change, because it's got the advantage of being carbon-free, but also baseload power that'll keep the lights on. And the new technologies, the small modular reactors, they're not like Chernobyl or Fukushima. They're inherently safe, smaller and safe. So, you know, it's the answer, really, to the climate change issue. There's no carbon and it keeps the lights on. Why didn't we do it 20 years ago? So, you know, Peter Dutton, good that he said that, but from opposition, will they really do something in government? Because they've had a couple of chances now and squibbed it.
Let's, before I let you go, quick one about the MP Ben Franklin. Do you think the New South Wales Nationals are going to actually expel him from the party?
Well, they're certainly dirty on him because he's reduced their numbers in the parliamentary chamber from 6 to 4. And he's played a role in turfing out their former leader, Paul Toole. So he's caused a huge disruption there. And what I don't like about his appointment is that that was at the request of Chris Minns. Apparently, this just tells you something about how New South Wales politics works these days. The National Party guy is the godfather to one of the Minns children. They holiday together. They're long-standing friends and buddies, and I suppose politically are very close to each other in their beliefs. And Chris Minns has played a role in deciding who will run the upper house. The upper house role, and it's evolved very strongly over the last 4 years, is to keep the government accountable, to hold the government to account. Well, if the government's allowed to decide who runs the chamber, then that accountability function is weakened. So I think that's the lasting damage. A lot of short-term damage to the National Party, but longer-term damage to the accountability functions and reputation of the Legislative Council.
I'd like his lurks and perks, though, particularly the private dining room bit.
Oh, yeah, and a stack of staff, plenty of room down in that office, a big salary, I think near $400,000, a driver, a car. You know, he'll be buying a helicopter next. They spent so much money in that building. So, yeah, he's on a good wicket, and he's gone for that package of benefits at the request of the Premier, and it's changed the balance of numbers in the chamber. But I will say on the flip side, personally, I've always got on well with Ben Franklin. I find him to be an affable, sensible sort of person. I enjoy his company. I've never really had an argument with him, which is perhaps unusual for me. So he's sort of a good guy, Ben, and I hope he can leave the Minns factor in the past and be a truly independent president for our chamber, because that's what we need, and we've got to continue to keep the government to account.
I've got to go. Back to the news. I'll catch up with you next week. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Brent. All the best.
Thanks, Mark.